Hello everybody, Mariner here, and welcome to Net That Hall and the Game Week 5 matchup review show. As always, with Gabe, FPL Lens, across in Phoenix, Arizona. How are you doing, my friend?
Hoping for no crackle, but doing okay for now.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're hoping for something after this weekend, Gabe, but we'll come on to this game week in a second or two. I think there's a few people who are waiting with bated breath for a Mariner rant. But anyway, Lucien, how are you, my friend?
Well, I don't know. I was expecting a green arrow, actually, because I own Salah and all. But...
Gabe, mute.
For some reason, I just don't have... a green arrow. I had a decent score and still I don't have a green arrow. I have no idea what the casuals are doing that we're doing so badly. That's about it, really.
I don't think, if it's any consolation, I don't think many people did have a green arrow. I saw someone, who was it? I think it was Az, one of the, probably the most senior of all FPL content creators kicking around. 9.4 million rank, 9.4 million players. I haven't looked at mine, Gabe. I'm doing exactly what you said. I am not looking at my rank. I am not looking. I am in a good mood for other reasons, but I am not looking at my rank. Anyway, yeah, not to worry. Great. Let's. What a shit week. Right. Let's have a look. I'm going to explain why it's so shit as well right now. You ready? There you go. Right. Players who scored more than 10 points this game week. Bernardo, 13. Trossard, 11. Robertson, 11. Douglas Lewis, 10. Neto, nearly netoed that hole, 10. Gross, 10. Sanchez, 10. Salah, the only player owned by more than 10% of players, 10 points. Hudson-Odoi, 10. Harmer, 10. Kulusevski, Gabe's nemesis, who he hates, 10. In fact, that's typical. I think that sums it up, Gabe. The only player to get 10 points from Spurs is Kulusevski.
I think Spurs is enacting its revenge for all the bias I've had against Spurs for the past several years.
I think they are. We're going to get on to the Wolves and Liverpool game. We're going to bring you straight in, Lucien, on Wolves against Liverpool any second. But I'm just going to start off with this one because, of course, my team, my FPL team, is definitely not doing this season. It is not nettoing that hole. But that's its name, Netto That Hole. And I have to say, I was very impressed with the gentleman on the screen, Netto. I thought he was excellent. We called him out, but as a provider, which he turned out he was, albeit for headers. But no, good start, because I'll tell you what, he made Joe Gomez look like a wheelie bit. It was very funny.
He looked like a wheelie bit.
He made a lot of people look bad, didn't he, that day? He really did. He looked fine, and I was amazed he never went on the hold in the second half, quite frankly. I think that shows how Liverpool were much better. Anyway, Lucien, I'll come to you. Gabe, if you wouldn't mind just muting out just so that we lose this echo. Right, Lucien, Wolves against Liverpool. Over to you, my friend.
Well, it's a pretty straightforward game plan for Liverpool, isn't it? I think what everyone's curious about is the role of Matias Cunha. But I'm going to go straight to the slides, right? I think you've already touched on Neto against the right back, whether it be TAA or Gomez in the future. But we talk about who is at the end of those crosses, right? And Cunha, unfortunately, is just not a target man. He did a lot of link-up play, creating space so that Neto can actually dribble at Joe Gomez, right? And the biggest benefactor would be whoever played on the right wing. It was Huang in the first half, and they basically ran out of target men in the second half because Fabio Silva did a dire job. But more important was actually Luis Diaz's impact when he came off the bench. Because for some weird reason, Liverpool did not operate with any wingers in the first half at all. So when he brought Luis Diaz on, he did not become a winger. we all keep talking about how Luis Diaz is meant to finish the chances that Salah creates. Unfortunately, this time Luis Diaz was actually provider, and it came down to Darwin's finishing on the day, which, you know, that was that one big save by Saar, right? And beyond that, well, I guess fortunately enough, everyone else did finish pretty well, and that's how it ended.
Yeah, which idiot put Darwin Núñez on one of our thumbnails last week, Kip?
I can, you know, it wasn't this idiot. It was another idiot.
I know it wasn't. It just makes you crackle. I'm just going to bring the rest in whilst we're doing it. At NetXG, Liverpool had 1.97, Wolves 1.55. So just let's just look at that from that basis, right? And my fixture field didn't really fancy it, but I think Liverpool are looking a bit better away from home, Gabe, to be honest with you. How are you doing with your sound?
Check.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. You know, it was interesting to see Luis Diaz, because Luis Diaz had been on the end of a lot of Liverpool's chances up until this past game week. And I don't know if introducing Darwin into the equation, you know, Salah is playing more centrally, it seems, as well. So it's like Darwin and Salah together. And does that dynamic bring Luis Diaz? Does it make him play in a deeper role? Before this game against Wolves, I was considering Luis Diaz as a possible Salah alternative. But if we see this kind of dynamic repeat itself, I don't think there is a Salah alternative.
That's what I'm worried about as well, I have to say. As a previous owner of Salah this year, and then spreading the funds to try and lump on Chelsea, which we've enough said about that, we will move on. But yes, anyway, 3-1, we didn't see it, not quite. We did see the idea of Pedro of Neto having a bit of fun, and it did. Let's keep going then. Aston Villa against Crystal Palace. What happened in this one? Well, here's one for you, boys. I want to bring in. There's a lot of late goals coming up. And we said pre-season, nah, don't worry about these extra 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes. And I was thinking to myself this week, you bunch of bastards. I said it in pre-season. I was absolutely bloody convinced that there would be loads of late goals. And so far, what's happening? I was sat there watching my rank hemorrhage between about minute 90 and a minute 115. Oh, no, 105, not 115, it was 25 minute stoppages. 105, Gabe. Where do we go with this one? We'll come on to that one. I think we'll bring that topic up tomorrow. Late goals, remember that. We'll remember that. On this fixture, though, Lucien, Watkins got his assist again. Still hasn't scored this season, by the way, people, if you're not aware of that. But Aston Villa, 1.71 next year, Gabe. We thought that was the case. My fixture difficulty didn't see it either. But Lucien, over to you. Eventually, Aston Villa did a job on Crystal Palace, but Edouard scored again. Mate, over to you.
Yeah, that is a really weird one. I think this is the first game where Villa have officially abandoned their box. I think they've just had too many creative midfielders get injured to the point that they don't even want to bother using McGinn. Zaniolo did a decent job creating from the left side, but really in the end, as Gabe put it in slides here, the left does create for the right. However, it was Palace that was a lot more interesting, because Eze barely got a chance to actually run at Matty Cash. That was the sad thing, really, because that was what we were all looking forward to, right? Watching Eze actually do well. But away from home, Palace are basically toothless in terms of sustaining possession. So really the story is about Aston Villa. And I think the only regret here was that Jordan Ayew was injured so early in the game that Palace themselves had to shuffle themselves around. The biggest benefactor creating from the right would be Jean-Philippe Mateta. He just did his conventional second striker thing, held up the ball and played Edouard basically as a 4-4-2. It was really a conventional Roy Hodgson 4-4-2. So it just comes down to whether you want to rely on Eze on the flanks or you want to buy one of the front two when Crystal Palace's fixtures clear up.
I think they're clearing up already. I've got to be honest with you. He's right firmly in my thoughts for the future, to be honest, Edouard. It looks a very, very good value. And in fact, quite frankly, I think I'd sooner go for Edouard than a Luton double because I think the shit. Gabe, Edouard's got 67% actual involvement, 47% expected involvement. Not bad for a 5.5.
Yeah, you can't.
You're still crackly. I mean, look, personally, I mean, just try and sort it out. But Lucy, just coming back to you, do you see Edouard as, I mean, I think he's great value. I've got to be honest. I think he's really good value at that price. And I mean, the fixtures are coming, are turning in the right way, right? What we got?
Read the home games only.
Yeah, anyway, we've got Fulham at home, then Forest at home, then Spurs at home, then Everton at home. That's in the next 6 weeks. I quite like
I mean, yeah. Who doesn't, right?
Yeah, we've got some real problems with the sound, boys. Real big problems. We're echoing all over. I'm sorry about this, everybody.
I mean, gives me just so try, I can continue to speak now.
Yeah, just try and carry on. But yeah, home Fulham, home Forest, home Spurs, home Everton. So I and then away at a leaky Manchester United, away at Newcastle, away at Burnley. Not bad fixtures, really. I mean, Newcastle's tough.
I think the biggest thing about Crystal Palace, especially if you want to have one of the attackers at home, right, is whether you want to buy the creative guy or you want to buy the finisher. So right now, I think everyone who's watched the highlights would definitely recognize that Edouard's finish massively owed to Emi Martinez slipping over. So, you know, on a different day, Edouard could have basically had nothing because that was pretty much the only chance that Edouard got. I mean, you're looking at home games and you know, you're asking yourself the same question. Do I want an Eze or do I want an Edouard? Because it's very unlikely that we get both, right? So I would say that at home, when the crowd is backing a dribbler to actually take on the player, you definitely see Eze shine a lot more at home, at least compared to Edouard.
Yeah, I mean, don't disagree with you. I mean, as I say, I just look at it as the value and maybe there's a spot for him. In most people's teams right now, and I think people are looking at the double game week of Luton. I don't know if I'd be looking at Foster from Burnley rather than Luton Morris, but there's another story. Gabe, I'm not sure how your sound is now. Do you want to come back and just give it a test? I still can't hear you muted now.
Check.
That's okay. Yeah. Anything you want to say about Edouard before you jump off? Before we jump off onto the next one?
No, we can move on. We can move on to the next
okay.
one. Okay. I'm still messing with the few seconds.
All right. No problem. Right. The next one then. Fulham against Luton. Well, what do we have to say about this one, boys? 1-0 to Fulham. I think it was last on Match of the Day. That was my old standard joke on that one. Well, NetXG suggested 1.47 for Fulham, 1.27 for Luton. Fixed difficulty thought Fulham were going to win and liked Fulham's right. Lucien, how did this one go? I didn't watch it. I think it was a scrappy goal, if I recall, Vinicius. Maybe Luton should have had something. What's your view?
Luton should have had something, but Gabe, need you first, real quick. Yeah, thank you. Yes, as for Fulham, I think the slides, and we have talked about multiple times how much we miss Andreas Pereira as the number 10. That has not come back at all. Andreas Pereira is firmly sitting in central midfield. But the good news is that one of Fulham's new signings came on and he actually pushed Andres Pereira a lot further forward. One of our favorite players, Alex Iwobi, coming in for Harrison Reed. So that has basically directly addressed one of Fulham's weaknesses. So they now have two number 10s operating between the lines instead of just Andres Pereira alone. So forget your Raul Jimenez's. Right now we have Iwobi and Andres Pereira doing massive damage. So attacking-wise, they are expected to improve, at least compared to Willian and Harry Wilson on the flanks. It's fun, though, to watch Fulham play now because they are equally terrible on the flanks. Luton basically went past their fullbacks like hot knife through butter. And yeah, Carlton Morris had a few chances outside. I think the worrying thing here was that Luton made quite a lot of changes. Amari Bell, everyone's favorite 4 million defender before Kabore showed up, actually played left wing back and he had a decent chance. Kabore was basically spamming cross after cross and they just lacked the finisher. Simple as that. They lacked decent quality center backs, and that was how, as you said, a scrappy goal, right? It was just a simple cross. Kaminsky spilled the ball and Vinicius was there for a tap-in. Really as simple as that. So, yeah, Luton are basically just short, you know, 7 out of 10. Even though they have a good performance, their quality is just showing in this league. Simple as that.
Gabe, can you just come to you then? I was just trying to unmute you myself then to see if it worked. But did you, from your perspective here, how invested are you in Luton for this double game week, just briefly?
Checking sound real quick.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, you're all right. Yeah, you're good at the moment.
I think the double game week is a distraction. you gotta stay the course. I'm not interested in the slightest in that double game week, especially there are other players, good players on good teams with decent matchups, which obviously we'll get to that in the matchups show. But not interested in the double game week, even in my situation with my team and wildcard and all that.
Fair enough. All right then, let's keep going. Manchester United against Brighton. Well. How many passes was that goal? I watched it. I think it's about something like 1 minute and 30 seconds or something like that from starting the ball, passing it out sideways from the 6 yard box to going up to the end for Pascal Gross to score. The clips of people doing the watch alongs of Manchester United are absolutely hilarious if you're not a Manchester United fan. But I'm just going to cover the game itself rather than just wax lyrical about everybody else's misfortune. Manchester United, 1.73 net XG. It fancied them against Brighton. Brighton away from home have not necessarily been doing that well this season. Manchester United's fixed difficulty as well, +5. I really liked them. Game itself, Manchester United were bloody awful. Although saying that, how many returns could Rash on another day? I still say Rashford could have had a bloody hatful. So, Lucien, coming back to you, tell us about this one.
Okay, I'm just going to echo this.
And hear the echo loud and clear.
All right, thanks, Gabe. Right, so I think we have to recognize that both sides had massive changes, some of it due to Prison FC, some of it due to Brighton doing... What's this? Is it the De Zerbi roulette now, or does he have a different name for it? Because when Tuchel did his rotations, they called it Tuchel Tombola. So, yeah, De Zerbi's had his fair share of rotations. And yes, number one, slide said, right? Confronting Veltman at right back. Rashford actually did a number on Veltman, and he also confronted Van de Henke, however you pronounce his name. So, yes, fair play to Rashford. He did fantastically. Bruno, however, did the whole sulking thing where he dropped into deep midfield pretty much alongside Casemiro at times. And once again, it was Eriksen that was star of the show. The unfortunate thing is that we don't buy Man United for counter-attacks alone. And that's all Man United are good for at the moment. Brighton, however, wow. I mean, you don't have Estupiñán, you play a right-back at left-back. That is a world of difference. I think what's notable is that they don't rely on a number nine. Like, you don't say that, oh yeah, Ferguson starts, Brighton are going to win 4-0. They now can rely on Welbeck and Lallana partnering up top, and they'll still smash teams. You can have Ferguson, Joao Pedro, Adingra. Like, they can play so many different number nines, right? And Ansu Fati's not even part of the conversation yet. So all we know right now is that De Zerbi operates with this thing called verticality. If you can find a player that does the vertical running down to up, such as Pascal Gross, you've got a winner on your hands. But I'm pretty sure, you know, we stick to the basic stuff, right? You just want the player who gets 90 minutes. And it's unfortunate that Mudge barely got a look in. Mitoma was really quiet because he didn't have Estupinian by his side. And we aren't really considering anybody else, literally.
Oh, yeah, okay, fair enough. I mean, I just looked at the XG, Gabe. Brighton, 2.18. Manchester United, 1. Brighton, 3 big chances. Manchester United, 1. Brighton winning on pretty much every metric going. And watching the game, I don't think that's a false story.
Check.
Yeah, you're okay for now. We're going to fix this one way or the other, and we're going to try and resolve this back next week if we can.
I mean, yeah, it basically flipped the stats around in this one, and then that accounts for Eric Ten Frod's tactical disaster class. more on that.
Okay, excellent. Right. Tottenham, Sheffield United. Well, now here we go then. Now, there's another game which I think took a lot of people by surprise, hence my views about late goals, not least the fact that the person who was involved was probably the two people who were involved, probably the least people we expected to be involved. And that was Richarlison and also Kulusevski. But yeah, it finished 2-1, Lucien. Spurs next is G said 2.1, Sheffield United 1.21, my fixture given to 2.4 against minus 0.8. I think Gabe would probably say he went for 2-1 here. I think I would probably have gone for 2-0 if that was odd, something like that from my sort of predictions. What it did like, Lucien, is it liked Spurs left. In fact, it liked Spurs flanks a bit more. It really fancied shots in box. Over to you.
Right. Well, with the slides, I'm going to start there. Half space operators, Sarr and Yves Bissouma had the biggest chances of the first half. I think the highlights were good enough to show that. So at the moment, yes, when you face a deep block, the late runners are going to benefit. So it was just unfortunate that neither Sarr nor Bissouma finished their big chances early on. Had they taken the lead really, really early on, we wouldn't have needed to wait for, you know, 8 minutes into the stoppage time of the second half to see something, right? I think we can also be a little bit smug about Sheffield United's numbers being boosted by Cameron Archer's presence, because we have an actual benefactor. It's not Gustavo Hammer. We're not going to rely on his worldies. It's actually James McAtee. James McAtee, I think, played a prominent part in Sheffield United's promotion to the Premier League. And yeah, the boy has continued his usual late run from midfield. So I think if we want an enabler midfielder instead of an enabler attacker, McAtee should be first name on the list, if not Papa Matasar himself. Yeah, I don't think there are any other points in this slide left to talk about besides the miracle that is James Maddison. But I'll leave, you know, to Gabe and you to talk about that.
The enigma. Do you mean the enigma that is James Maddison? And so the moment that Marinus brings James Maddison into his team, he blanks. I did manage to avoid the Sun pick, the old movement towards Sun, which a lot of people went for. But to be quite honest, Gabe, and this is about the only rant I'm going to have this week. What is going on with VAR? I'm done with it. I'm so done. That was a stonewall bloody penalty. I just find it remarkable. And then the next thing is that the next remarkable scenario in this game as well was listening to Sheffield United's manager complaining that they played 11 minutes or 12 minutes stoppage time, when in fact it could have been about 15. Because I've never seen such a ridiculous time wasted in all my life. It was pathetic. What was your view on this game? What do you, first of all, you know, the VAR decision very quickly. And secondly, just in general, you know, the game itself.
I don't think there's a problem with VAR. I think there's a problem with officiating in the Premier League. They're just terrible, and they're incompetent, and they're biased, and there's just nothing good I can say about almost any of them. What was the second question, Sai?
No, just in general, the game. I mean, obviously, there was a massive amount of injury time, or stoppage time, probably due to the massive amount of time wasting which was going on, which, quite frankly, was probably some of the worst I've ever seen.
I have no problem with time wasting. It's part of the game.
I have a problem in it when I'm watching a game, because I think I know you're going to get the minutes, but I'll tell you what, I don't have the problem. Lucian's disappeared now. Maybe he's sick of us time wasting. But no, from my side, but I look at it this way. Okay, time waste, but don't complain if you get it added on.
Well, I mean, that's the manager complaining at the end, like whatever. You can't change, like, whatever the manager says. I don't know. That's irrelevant. I don't even listen to the manager press conferences. But if you're playing against a team that is by all measures ranked, you know, higher than you are, and you're winning, then waste time.
You're gonna try.
It's your job.
You're gonna try, are you? Okay. All right, fair enough. All right. Right, yes, and James Maddison blanked. Lovely, fantastic. Thanks to VAR, or lack of it, maybe. Right, here's one for you, boys. West Ham against Manchester City. Manchester City lose their clean sheet again. This time a lot earlier than normal. And James Ward-Prowse, again, is involved in pretty much everything West Ham do at the moment. But I'm just going to give you some stats for this game. Manchester City's XG, 4.87. 4.87. Eight big chances, of which six fell to Erling Haaland. I didn't captain him. I dodged him. Huge bullet here, boys. As much as I complained about the fact I scored 30 points this week, I could have been, oh my God, it could have been a disaster, an unmitigated disaster. I think the moral of the story is back the Rhino in future. I think just back him and just go with the flow. Lucian, maybe the fixture difficulty and NetXG thought this was going to be a little bit tougher for Manchester City than West Ham. Manchester City at West Ham, I should say. And certainly the XG matchups, the big chances matchups, never saw anything like it. Shots, nothing really saw this, shall we say, the amount of XG that was actually on offer for Manchester City. What's your view on the game?
Can you imagine if Haaland scored that tap-in from that Bernardo Silva goal, how much higher that XG would be? I swear. I think the biggest factor was Bernardo Silva. Him playing on the right wing literally changed the entire landscape. Like, usually what will happen is that City have been playing entirely narrow for the past four games, especially with Jack Grealish on the left. And now with Doku on the left, it seems that they're going wide, like really, really wide on the left. And to maintain the width on the right side, they push Kyle Walker really high up. I think Kyle Walker owners would have felt really sore about this, because there was this one massive chance, I think, in the 80th minute that Haaland missed that one he absolutely should have scored, among all the other big chances. So, yes, Bernardo Silva is the first factor, but I think what we have to understand here is that Jeremy Doku is a different type of player than Jack Grealish. It's almost as if Doku's like the Aston Villa version of Jack Grealish, where he wants the ball and he wants to dribble at players. Whereas Grealish somehow has been like molded and eroded over the years by Pep's nagging to the point where he has to be selfless. He has to play other players in. And I think, yeah, Doku's going to, you know, as I quote one of Gabe's favorite words, cannibalize some of the other forwards' chances. And I feel that this is where Foden's time officially ends. Having said that, Julian Alvarez's lob, oh my gosh, that assist for Bernardo Silva was so bloody good. Like, the margins that he had between defense and goalkeeper, that had to be perfect to break the deadlock. And I think, yeah, we got to give props to the slide maker for JWP on the counter, because that was exactly what happened, and it was perfect, absolutely perfect. So, I mean, that's about it, right? West Ham counter attacks really well, going past Doku himself. So I think zonal matchup-wise, you can potentially target City's left side by right wing against City in case you want to hold somebody for the long term. That's all I'd say.
I think Ward-Prowse is making a difference for West Ham, Gabe. He's only got 32% goal involvement, or expected goal involvement, actually, over the season. But saying that, you know, he's involved. He looks like he's involved, and he looks like the eye test tells you that he's probably going to be involved in more things than not when it comes to West Ham. He's not that expensive either. Is he on your mind? I know a little birdie told me you might have hit your wild card button. In fact, I think I heard you say it earlier on. Well done. Are you interested in James Ward-Prowse? I'm not quite sure the fixtures are brilliant, but I think he's a good option.
So, yeah, I think I really like what we've seen from Ward-Prowse this season. I think he's almost has like a Gundogan effect on West Ham. And I think when targeting City's left side, I think that's where the creation will come from. But the goals will come, like, it'll come from a diagonal or a cross or something from that, and the goal will come from somewhere else. But I think Ward-Prowse just has so many routes to points now. He's a late runner into the box, set pieces, of course, penalties, of course. He's on pens. Oh, wait, I'm not sure he's on pens. Now that I say that, I'm not really sure about that. So take that one back. But so there's a spot in my team for Ward-Prowse. And that spot is currently occupied, but when his fixtures change in a few game weeks, then he's 100% coming into my team.
Yeah, I like it. I like it as well. I like it a lot. Okay, excellent. Newcastle Brentford. Here's another one then. Newcastle's XG, we predicted 1.95, Brentford 1.18. Fixture difficulty, loved it. Someone said, what's that up with the fixture difficulty? It's learning. Fixed difficulty is learning. It does. It learns. We all learn as we go through the season. And at the moment, the fixed difficulty is learning. It's a bit extreme because obviously there's extremes of like the number of chances. It'll balance itself out. It'll probably drop down in a week or two. But it really fancied Newcastle. And quite frankly, so did I. I thought Newcastle would probably do all right against Brentford. And in fact, similar to what they did last year, they battered them, didn't they? This one, though, it was tight. The one thing I'll say is, as a owner of Kieran Trippier, he probably got me. He probably saved me from a Gabe-esque 25 points. In fact, I know he did. I think he gave me just a few more points there. Sorry, Gabe. I couldn't resist it. I only got 30, by the way. But yeah, I thought that, and I think Newcastle defence, I think it showed, I think, that Newcastle defence are an option going forward. One, possibly a double up. Lucien, tell us about this game.
I'm not going to dress it up. I'm not even going to call it tight. This was basically an audition for the Milan game at San Siro. And the, you know, the slight mention,
which is just about to start above my head.
Yeah. So I mean, the slide talks about Tonali and Joel Linton, neither started. So the reason Trippier was so heavily involved was because the central midfield was absolutely dog shit. So I mean, so put it this way, right? When I analyze games, I usually look for chances that have higher than 0.10 XG. Absolutely nothing. There was absolutely nothing in open play that had more than 0.10 XG all the way until the injury time of the second half, when Yohan Wissa like had a stupid weak header at Pope. So it was a really bad game. And it didn't help that Rico Henry at left back for Brentford got injured in the 42nd minute. So It came down to individual moments and minor mistakes. A slight misjudgment by Hickey at left back, failing to clear the ball, and suddenly Flecken just collides into Gordon, who did nothing all game. So it's really, it's just a case of attacks from both sides being crap.
And I've got to be honest, and another one, right? That was a soft penalty to me, super soft, and it wasn't looked at, or if it was, it wasn't looked at in any length of time. Very, very odd. And my clean sheet went as a result because I had flaked. Sorry, I'm on antibiotics. I'll stop laughing. I'm coughing and choking here. There's a question here from Connor. You guys still have a sack? Not for long, Connor. He's toast. He's on his way out. I think he's starting tonight as well. I thought I just saw him wandering down the tunnel just this second in the San Siro. So can I see him? Yes, I think he's there. Okay, yeah, probably definitely selling him. Right, here we go. Gab, I'm going to rant again. Bournemouth, Chelsea. Oh, God, this was awful. This is just awful. Thankfully, I didn't watch too much of it. But what bit? And the reason I didn't watch a lot of it, boys, was because Chilwell's benched. And Gusto was second on the bench. And just to let you know that Diaz, I actually benched. So I called Manchester City losing their clean sheet. So I benched him. Yeah. It was second bench, Gusto. Thank you, Ben Chilwell. Thank you, Poch, bringing him on for a little run at the end. But this fixture, didn't really think that Chelsea were going to go crazy, to be fair. Neither of us predicted it, Gabe. We said it could be a tough day at the office. We thought it would be. I find Bournemouth a bit all fart, no poo, if I'm honest with you. You know? But I suppose on another day, Solanke could have got something. Lucien, it liked Chelsea's right. I don't think it liked much else on the zonals or anything come to matter. What about the game?
Well, to be fair, Sterling did have two good chances on the right side before all the stupid substitutions were made in the second half. So, I mean, you got to give credit to Sterling. He did try. He just didn't deliver. I think more importantly here is that, you know, your point on Bournemouth revolves around who they play on the flanks. They have so many options on the flanks now. They've had, Jadon Anthony and Semenyo start the season. And now they have Tavernier and Ouattara starting for this game. Like, they have so many wingers, and the only constant is Philip Billing as a number 10. So I don't even know. Different wingers will bring different types of chances for Bournemouth, and that's why they've looked so, you know, they've had such a bad start. But I mean, no one's really that interested in Bournemouth attack in the first place anyway. So I think we should just let them be and see when their fixtures clear up and when they play the three promoted teams to even think about them. But yeah, at the moment, Solanke, did he thrive against Thiago Silva? No. He only, how do we put it? He's one of those players that just waits in the box until a lucky bounce falls for him. And that's okay, you know, if you like that type of player in your squad, at least compared to an Otton Edward who would barely get chances. I think Solanke is in and around the box all the time. And it's just a matter of whether he chooses to take a shot off his wingers or he just chooses to let his wingers be and shoot themselves.
Yeah, he's definitely overperforming as well by the looks of things, Solanke. So I think that's another thing you've got to keep an eye on with him. Gabe, coming back to your wonderful wild card, which is underway as we speak, I would like to guess whether you have one, two, or three Chelsea players in your wild card, and I'm going to go with none.
you're absolutely right. I have none. But to be fair, I went into my wild card with only one Chelsea player, so I was never heavily invested in Chelsea. That wasn't one of the reasons for my wild card, but it certainly helped get rid of Chilwell.
I've got three. I soon will have two, and then I may be stuck with one because I think Gusto's just going to sit rotting but at that price. I could probably rot him and not worry about him too much. Well. But I have to say, now, the only slight doubt I've got about selling Chilwell, but I probably will have to if I want to get to Salah, is the fact that there was rumours he was unwell rather than dropped. So, but even then, I just think Chilwell is not the player that we have seen in the past so far. Would you agree?
Yeah, you know, it's the only difference I see in Chilwell really is his finishing. And that could just be a product of just like lack of, like he's been hurt. He was hurt for so long. So when he comes back into training, he's not working on finishing, is he? So just like he's still maybe adjusting to that part of the game after coming back from injury, potentially. But everything else, I mean, I don't think Chilwell's spot is necessarily in doubt per se. The one thing I think he has going against him is if his defensive responsibilities are taken away from him, then like if he wants, you know, someone else back there, like I think Colwill played right on the left side. If he only sees Chilwell as a winger, it's great that he's out of position, but it's not great that his roles are limited. So he may see less playing time given certain tactical setups. But again, Chelsea is just like a fire sale, right?
Jackson is just so bad. He's so bad. I mean, he's Darwin Nunes-esque last season.
Yeah.
As bad.
Yeah.
I mean, he's actually, his individual numbers for his XG, I was looking at this earlier for the season. What was it? I think it was something ridiculous. Jackson, where is it? His XG for a player. Here we go. Hang on a second. I'll soon tell you because I thought I could get it. He's third for XG from individual players over the season. Have a guess who's first. That's obvious. Have a guess who's second. Who do you think second for XG across all players?
Darwin.
Go on. No, it's not. It's Mposto, the Mboomobile at 3.41. And then Jackson, 3.18. So Haaland, 7.03. Then 3.41. Then 3.18. And Edouard, fourth with 3.1. Oh, gentlemen.
And without pens.
Without pens.
That's non-pens. Yes. Not the pick for Mbomo.
Yeah, that's really knocked my headphones off getting so excited about Edouard then.
Somebody please click that, getting so excited about it.
Right, okay. Anyway, I need to be excited because I need to wake you up from this bloody snore fest, which was Everton against Arsenal. God, it was bloody boring. It was awful. What a bloody awful game that was. And in fact, I think NetXG and the fixed difficulty saw it was going to be bloody rubbish as well. Although we've got a mistake on the slide. But anyway, who cares? That's not unusual for us. Lucien, how do I summarise this one? I the actual XG for this game totaled about 0.6. No, totaled 1 in total, actually. Sorry, I should say. Arsenal, 0.78. Everton, 0.21. No big chances. 4 shots in the box. Everton look very, very, very poor. Arsenal away from home looked like... Arsenal away from home. Lucy, over to you.
There is this gambling secret where it says that if the away side scores in the first half, that you get more than 2.5 goals that across 90 minutes. If that Martinelli goal was not called for offside, I'm pretty sure the game would have ended 2-2 instead of 3-1. Unfortunately, it did not get allowed. So, yes, the game was basically it was as boring as Dwight McNeil, who was the biggest difference in this side. Because we talked about Danjuma taking on Ben White or Thomas Partey, right? And in the end, Dwight McNeil started on the left flank. Whoop-dee-doo. I mean, we also tried to predict Martinelli having a field day against Pedersen. And, well, to start with, Pedersen didn't even start, right? They had put Ashley Young at right back. And then, you know, Martinelli still had a field day against Ashley Young, and then he got injured so quickly that, well, you know, that's how a lot of us got such bad scores, right, this week. I think the classic cliche, I believe they were saying, there were a number of content creators that said that Arsenal barely win at Everton, right, over the last couple of years. And so this was one of those stubborn games that favored Odegaard, that, you know, who usually grows into games. And it wasn't surprising that, you know, it was Odegaard that played in Saka to set up the winner for, who was it? I don't even remember. Oh, yes, Trossard. So everything operates down the right side yet again, because we know that when Arsenal are in trouble, Odegaard bails them out from the right side. So as long as you can predict if Arsenal are going to have a hard time, yeah, buy Odegaard. Otherwise, stick to Bukayo Saka's and your Martinelli's and whatnot. Simple as that.
Fair enough. I'm not sure how many people own Aaron Ramsdale, but I was imagining there'll be a few people selling Aaron Ramsdale after this week, Gabe. I think, quite frankly, I can't work out which goalkeeper I would want now, so I think that's dead in the water for me. Arsenal just doing Arsenal things, though. Clean sheet. You know, they're starting to... I think I would say they ground this one out. What would you say? And just one other point, which I'm going to come to you as well. Trossard. Martinelli injured. I don't know how long for. I think that might be something to keep an eye on, because that was a very good finish.
Yeah, it was a great finish. But I got to say, I don't enjoy watching Arsenal. I don't feel like they're free-flowing. I don't feel like they're very creative. I feel like they had trouble penetrating. So I don't know. I'm just like, I think Trossard, yeah, he's probably a good value replacement, something like that. But yeah, I think there's just more upside elsewhere. I think Arsenal has a lot of stable players. I think Saka is obvious, one of those players that will tick along all season independent of fixture. But the rest of them, for me, the upside is not big enough to deal with the inconsistency, I think I would say.
I mean, for me, I'm probably just going to stick with Saka, and that'll do, quite frankly. He's on penalties, or should be. He's still involved in most things. He's still, I think you just, with players, teams like that, maybe just don't overthink it and just go for the talisman. Or more of the, although they do spread that. The thing is with Arsenal, again, they spread that XG about a bit, don't they? This is another thing which makes them a bit tricky, really. Let's finish off then with Forest against Burnley. Well, we thought that Forest would have, we both thought, Gabe, that Forest would probably win. Fixed difficulty had 1.8 for Forest and minus 1.6 for Burnley. As it happened, so net XG 1.77, 1.13. As it happened, Burnley nearly got something out of it. In fact, they had a goal disallowed very late as well. Hudson-Odoi, absolute screamer. Iwonyi just keeps returning, although this was an FPL return rather than a real return, let's face it. Lucien, I'd like you to obviously comment about the game, but we've got a couple of minutes extra here. I'd just like to talk about Burnley from a perspective of the double game week, as to whether what's his name, Foster. Is it Foster? Foster is an option instead of Morris. There we go. Over to you.
Well, it comes down to whether his red card gets rescinded.
Oh, shit. Yes. Did he get a red?
For violent conduct.
Well, if that's the case, he's no good at all. My bad. I fell asleep because I'm on antibiotics, so I fell asleep and missed that. There we go. Enough said. Carry on.
My hit-to-hit for this game week.
Rewind.
In one of my leagues, right? One of my hit-to-hit depended on my Serge Aurier and my Matt Turner against my opponent's Lyle Foster. I swear, my heart throughout that game, right, was like, I was like the only person awake for that whole match. And when Foster got that assist, it was dead even. And then he had that goal disallowed. And then, oh my gosh, then he got sent off. And that was how I won my tie. It was so weird. So anyway, I have nearly 10 minutes to talk about Forest and Burnley. I'm so excited right now.
No, you don't. I'm getting us out of there far earlier than 10 minutes. I can promise you that. But anyway, keep going.
Let's go. Okay, so Burnley. Forest. Forest mentioned Awoniyi on central matchups. And yes, that did happen, but not in the box as usual, because Forest don't care about possession. Burnley do. So instead, it was refreshing at least to see that not everything flowed through Morgan Gibbs-White, because they have two Premier League level attackers in Ilanga on the right and Hudson-Odoi on the left. So basically, that front three has completely refreshed itself, and gone are the days of Brennan Johnson and Gibbs-White. So it's a completely refreshed attack, and we don't even care about the fullbacks anymore. I think the only concern is that Forest are still extremely weak centre-back-wise. They are not solid at all at the back. So they're purely relying on attacking returns. Well, unless they play Chelsea. So anyway, for Burnley, things are more interesting there, because Burnley has signed a lot of players. And that same thing, their front three, they've stuck with this new front three of Foster, Koliosho, and Amdouni. They've stuck with that same youthful front three since game week one. So technically, this front three has delivered on so many fronts that it's only a matter of time before Burnley really start scoring goals. It's really exciting stuff. So if you're worried about Lau Foster not featuring in a double game week, Amdouni and Koliosho can actually do a job. It just comes down to whether you can shoehorn them in. But everyone else is not relevant. Sander Birch is a potential factor, but he needs to actually start games before we can consider him. But beyond that, yeah, that's pretty much all she wrote.
Dave, I'm going to have a bit of a laugh with you. We're going to have a prediction here. How many points am I going to get if I play Marvelous Nakamba?
Just do it.
How many points are we going to get? I mean, look, I should get two appearance points times two. That's four, right? Four, right? Right. Probably a yellow card in each game. That makes it two. And then how many goals are they going to concede? Yeah.
You'll be lucky to get zero points.
All right, I will. All right, you're right. I'm not going to play him. I think I'll put him on the bench. just a general point, Gabe. On this game, Forest again at home, I think are worth keeping an eye on. I really like Awoniyi, actually. I think he looks to me is very interesting. I think if and when Forest fixtures turn a little bit, I think I'm quite interested in him. What's your perspective?
I think Awoniyi almost feels inevitable. He's going to be involved in something. Just like his presence there, independently of what his role is in a particular game, I think his presence, I would predict a goal for Forest in most games this season. I got to be honest. And like Lucien said, just the changes, the fact that they're less reliant on Morgan Gibbs-White. I highlighted Morgan Gibbs-White in the thread. He was one of the players indicated, and I was pleased to see him not kind of be highlighted. See them do different things. That was cool to see. So I think that's one of the lessons from this slide.
No, you make a good point, and we predicted that he would be the talisman at the start of the season. And in fact, he's only got 25% expected goal involvement. So that tells you it all. That tells you they're setting up differently, doesn't it? And everything's focal point is going through a 1 year at 52% expected goal involvement. So he's your talisman, as far as I'm concerned, for Notts Forest going forwards. Gentlemen, that's it. Thank you very much again. What I will do is I will just go through the usual bits, and then I'll come back to you. So first things first, the mini league is still operational. HUP69D, it's not difficult to come and try and beat anyone from that hall at the moment, because we ain't doing that. We ain't netting any halls, none of us. But anyway, nothing new there. there is a prize in the league for the patrons and the YouTube haulers as well. And there is prizes in that one. And again, that's a much smaller group of people. And most of them listen to us, which means they're also not doing very well, which means actually then, you know, that means that It might be quite a good thing to do. So join soon and get in there and you might get surprises. I'm only joking. I think there's one or two people doing quite well in that. Righty-ho. Let's say thank you to a few people. So Super Haulers, Thingamabob, David Harrison, FPL Nima, Zach, Haberboy, Daddy Bot, Greenback Golf, FPL Robbie, Dinesh, Rewani, Matthias, Kangashaka, Leon, Son of Sam, Terry, Timmy Tope, obviously then a long-time hauler, Dread, FPL, FPL Craig, Podner, Kevin Rose, FPL Saffa, Connor Hunt, Dhoni, FPL, Oscar Arias, FPL Teacher, Blonde, Scott Azem, William, Tom Gossuch, Devendra Raj, Lindsay O, FPL DG Boy, 88, Akshay, Dom, Claire, FPL, Catherine A, Sal, Samurai, Harry, Not Kane, Neil, Sebastian Koo, Benjamin Lockwood, FPL Rubber Ducky, Quack Quack, Neil Zappels, I think he's bragging about his rank, by the way, we'll have to sort him out, Nick Khan, Big Mike, FPL Discomfort, who is, as usual, causing trouble in the chat, I think, tonight, which is great to see. Welcome along, my friend. General Zod, Gladys Street Preachers, I'm not sure how long it'll be Gladys Street, because they've got a new stadium coming soon, they'll have to change his name soon. That's if they're even in the Premier League next year, but there's another story. Jack M, FPL Planner, FPL Bondos, Jamie Baker, Brett M, and Pai Hong Tan. Patrons, L. Ron, Lucian again, Lucian Gann, FPL California, Thingamabob, Ron Frosk, and Mike Moore. Thank you very much, each and every one of you. So, gentlemen, let's get out of here. Very nice of you to have you on again. I mean, first of all, thanks for coming on, given the fact that this game week was a complete unmitigated disaster. So, look, if we can review a game week which was so damn bad with a smile on our face, then we're halfway there. Lucian, thank you.
Thanks you're for muted. Having me again. I barely have strength to press the unmute button.
I don't know if you can see, but I've gone grey this show trying to keep you buggers online. I think there's only my sound worked. And Gabriel, as always, thank you so much, my friend.
Pleasure. I've also gone grey up in here, Mariner. I got some grey.
Well, that's it. That's impossible.
Yep. it was a pleasure. Listen, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, then. Anyway, I'll get us out of here and we'll see you tomorrow for the matchup show. I think it's tomorrow, is it?
Tomorrow morning.
Bloody hell. 24 hours. Better get preparing. Okay, all the best. See you soon, everybody. Bye bye. Bye bye.